I have the opinion of the court in case 235572, Fisher versus United States. This case is about the indictment of petitioner Joseph Fisher for his actions on January 6, 2021. On that day, while Congress met to certify the votes of the 2020 presidential election, a crowd of supporters of then-President Donald Trump gathered outside the Capitol. Some people forced their way into the building, breaking windows and assaulting police officers. The certification of the vote was delayed as a result. Fisher is alleged to have been among those who invaded the Capitol. Fisher was charged in an indictment with various crimes. The only one that concerns us today is a charge that he violated 18 U.S.C. Section 1512 C2. Now, Section 1512C has two subsections. Subsection C1 imposes criminal liability on anyone who corruptly, quote, alters, destroys, mutilates, or conceals a record, document, or other object, or attempts to do so, with the intent to impair the object's integrity or availability for use in an official proceeding. Subsection C2 extends that prohibition to anyone who otherwise obstructs, influences, or impedes any official proceeding or attempts to do so. Now, the question is whether C2 should be read as a freestanding provision, making it a crime to obstruct an official proceeding by any means, so long as the conduct is not already covered by C1. Under this reading, someone could be prosecuted under C2 for obstructing a proceeding by burning down the building where it was being held or blockading the roads leading to the building. Or should C2 be read in light of its connection to C1? C1 prohibits particular ways of impairing records, documents, or other objects used in a proceeding. C2 may be read as covering additional ways of interfering with the evidence in a proceeding, for example, by forging evidence. C2 could also extend the prohibited interference with evidence beyond records, documents, or objects to things such as witness testimony. Maybe Congress wanted to criminalize all conduct that obstructs an official proceeding in Section 1512C, gave a few examples in C1, and left the rest to be swept up by C2. This all-encompassing interpretation of C2 is what the government asks us to adopt. But C2 could have a narrower reach if Congress designed it to fill any gaps that might exist in C1. Today, we reject the government's sweeping interpretation of C2. We hold that C2 does not cover every other way that a person might obstruct an official proceeding. It instead closes whatever gaps there might be in C1. Our conclusion follows two principles of statutory interpretation. First, the canon of nocitor associus says that a word is given more precise content by its neighbors. And the canon of justum generis teaches that a general term is often defined by looking at the specific examples that come before it. Consider an everyday example. A zoo might post a sign that reads, "Do not pet, feed, or throw objects at the animals or otherwise disturb them." Now, if a visitor eats lunch in front of a gorilla or talks to a friend near its enclosure, has he obeyed the rule? Of course. The specific examples of impermissible conduct are all about direct harassment of the animals. Merely eating or talking is so unlike the petting, feeding, or throwing objects at an animal that it would be implausible to assume that they were prohibited. The same basic idea applies to Section 1512C. Subsection C1 includes many specific examples of prohibited actions that have the intent to impair an object's integrity or availability for use in an official proceeding. The most sensible way to read the statute is that those examples help define the scope of C2. And if we ignored those examples and read C2 as broadly as the government asks, C2 would swallow C1, leaving nothing for that narrow provision to do. It makes sense to read C2 as limited by C1 in light of the statutory history. Congress enacted this statute in the Sarbanes-Oxley Act to address a particular problem. In an earlier form, the statute made it a crime to persuade another person to shred documents, but curiously failed to punish a person for destroying records himself. The Enron scandal revealed that loophole. Even though Enron's auditor had destroyed documents, prosecutors had to prove that higher-ups convinced someone else to shred them. So Section 1512C was passed to plug this gap. It would be odd to conclude that in doing so, Congress actually created a catch-all that reaches far beyond the document shredding scenarios that prompted the legislation. Reading subsection C2 as a freestanding provision, not limited by C1, would also make many other anti-obstruction provisions in the federal code unnecessary. And it would erase the fine distinctions Congress drew among different types of obstructive conduct in Section 1512. That section prohibits nearly two dozen means of committing obstruction, with penalties ranging from 3 years to life in prison. Now, if C2 covered essentially all obstruction, many offenses that Congress assigned proportionate penalties to would all fall under the 20-year maximum in Section C2. Even stranger, an unlimited reading of C2 would impose decades in prison for conduct like protesting and lobbying. Now, our usual practice in obstruction cases has been to avoid reading provisions like C2 to create a cover-all statute. There's no reason to depart from that approach today. The judgment of the Court of Appeals is vacated, and the case is remanded for further proceedings consistent with our opinion. On remand, the Court of Appeals may assess the sufficiency of Fisher's indictment in light of our interpretation of Section 1512C2. Justice Jackson has filed a concurrence. Justice Barrett has filed a dissent, joined by Justice Sotomayor and Justice Kagan.